This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, May 29th, 2014. I'm Christina Karnatz.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. The KUAF Summer Jazz Series opens its 16th season with the jazz fusion group The Yellow Jackets, June 21st at 8 p.m. at the Eureka Springs City Auditorium. The Grammy Award-winning Yellow Jackets will present their high-energy mix of jazz, funk, and blues. The Summer Jazz Series is presented by the Northwest Arkansas Jazz Society. A link to tickets available online at KUAF.com.
Ahead, last night we talked with classical music trio Time for Three at Crystal Bridges about their performance Saturday evening with the Artisphere Festival Orchestra. We'll hear that conversation.
Plus, 47 miles a day. That's how far, on average, a female hiker hiked to make it through the Appalachian Trail in fewer than 50 days. Hiker and author Jennifer Farr Davis will stop by the Carver Center for Public Radio. And if you'd like to get into running, we'll offer some tips on how to do that.
But first, work on a trailhead at Fayetteville's Mount Kessler continues as the deadline for its construction inches closer. Jeremy Pate, Fayetteville's Planning Services Director, says that the trailhead will be complete by the end of next month, as required by the partnership grant given to the city by the Walton Family Foundation to help purchase the Mount Kessler property. But he says the gravel parking lot and dirt trail leading to the nature trails on the property will be temporary. He says that the reason is that there are several other projects currently being undertaken in the vicinity.
The Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality is currently doing some landfill remediation on an old landfill down the same road. And so there's a lot of truck traffic. So we didn't want visitors to use the same road just because of safety concerns with all this construction traffic. So we located the trailhead pretty soon off the road, and then we're building some trails to get up to the existing trails. I think that project wraps up this fall at some point in time. And right on its heels, the city will begin constructing the regional park, which will take 12 to 14 months, I think, to construct that as well, if not longer. And so where we decided to locate the trailhead is on the site of what's called the Great Lawn, a part of the regional park.
As work on the regional park continues, a paved lot will replace the gravel one, which is nearly complete. Pate says that the trailhead meshes into other future trail plans for Mount Kessler.
The Fayetteville Natural Heritage Association initiated an ecological assessment on the property. So essentially, they have contracted the Arkansas Natural Resource Commission to go out and do an assessment of everything that's on the mountain that might be environmentally or ecologically sensitive. We will use that information to issue a request for proposals for a trails master plan, hopefully to site trails sensitively on the mountain, balancing, obviously, the needs of users and our commitments to expand the trail system on the mountain to the Walton Family Foundation, but also balancing that with the ecological assets, which is one of the reasons that we purchased the property in the first place.
Pate says that the trails master plan for Mount Kessler will be developed this summer and fall. The city purchased the 376-acre site earlier in the spring for $3 million.
Simmons First is buying another bank. The Pine Bluff-based corporation announced yesterday it had entered into an agreement with Liberty Bank Shares in Missouri. Arkansas business reporter Lance Turner has this analysis.
It really pushes Simmons First into sort of a new level of in terms of size of banks in Arkansas. This deal for Liberty Bank Shares of Springfield, Missouri is worth about $207 million, but it will make Simmons First the second largest financial holding company headquartered in Arkansas once the deal closes. The deal is going to push them to $8 billion in assets. That's going to make Simmons First number two behind Arvest Bank Group, headquartered in Bentonville. They've got more than $14 billion in assets.
The deal is expected to close in the fourth quarter and is subject to approval by shareholders. In November, Simmons First outbid Arvest Bank and Ford Financial of Dallas to acquire Metropolitan National Bank of Little Rock.
Republican Tom Cotton began airing a new television ad yesterday, emphasizing his ties to Arkansas. It avoids mention of Cotton's military service, votes cast, and direct criticisms of Democratic opponent Mark Pryor. It does mention and show his newly wed wife, Anna. Political scientist Hal Bass with Ouachita Baptist University says the ad is an acknowledgement from Cotton's campaign he needs to connect more with voters on a personal level, rather than just touting conservative views.
I think it humanizes him. He had been away from the state for a long time and hadn't really established his identity here, and he's trying to, again, connect or reconnect in a way that emphasizes the Arkansas connection. which has been a very potent weapon for his opponent, Mark Pryor.
The ad is getting the most airtime in the Fort Smith area.
Unemployment rates in the region dropped again in April. According to data released yesterday by the Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics, the Northwest Arkansas metro area saw its jobless rate fall from 5.4% in March to 4.5% last month. That's still lower than the unemployment rate of 5.3% recorded in April 2013. Jobless rate in the Fort Smith metro also went down. From March to April, the unemployment rate fell a full point to 5.9%. That's substantially lower than the 7.5% unemployment rate from last April. Although the employment rate is lower, the overall labor force also shrank by about 2,000 people when compared year to year.
Tyson Foods is aiming to buy Hillshire Brands today. Tyson this morning announced a bid for the company, which owns brands such as Jimmy Dean, Ballpark, and Hillshire Farm. The proposed $6.8 billion bid equates to $50 per share, which represents a 35% premium to the closing price of Hillshire common stock as of May 9th, the day before Hillshire announced its proposed acquisition of Pinnacle Foods. The Tyson bid is also higher than the $5.5 billion offer Pilgrim's Pride recently made for Hillshire Brands.
Ozark Regional Transit will have a few changes beginning next week. Route 620, connecting Westport, Greenland, Farmington, Prairie Grove, and Lincoln, will begin regularly scheduled routes on weekdays from 6:15 a.m. to the last daily route at 6:15 p.m. Also beginning next week, designations for several fixed routes will change. Details for all the routes can be found at ozark.org.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals fell again last night to the San Antonio Mission 6-5. The loss puts the Naturals at 18-33 on the season. Play continues this evening in San Antonio.
Mostly cloudy tonight with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms in Northwest Arkansas. It's a 40% chance of rain in the Arkansas River Valley, lows from the mid to upper 60s. Tomorrow, clouds, 50% chance of rain in Northwest Arkansas, 40% chance of showers for the River Valley, highs tomorrow throughout the region, about 80. And for tomorrow night, mostly cloudy chance of showers and thunderstorms, lows from the lower to mid 60s.
This is Ozarks at Large. Last week was a big week in Arkansas politics as Democrats and Republicans chose their nominees for political office. Most of the action was on the Republican side. Last week, Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business and Politics hosted a roundtable discussion with KATV's lead Capitol reporter Janelle Lilly, Democratic Party of Arkansas Chairman Vince Insolico, and Republican Party of Arkansas Chairman Doyle Webb.
Let's begin with the primary results are in. We kind of know who your candidates are going to be, with the exception of the Attorney General's race, still headed for a runoff here. Tell me what you think the themes are going to be, the contrasts are going to be for the political parties and their candidates this year. Vince, I'll let you go first.
I don't think in Arkansas history there's ever been a starker contrast than there is between the Democratic candidates and Republican candidates. Whether it's being for protecting Medicare, whether it's for privatizing Medicare, which is what Tom Cotton wants to do, whether it's for a pre-K program for all kids that want to go to school to pre-K that Mike Ross is for, or being against that ASA is. And, you know, I don't think the contrast has ever been as stark as it is today.
I need you to get some jabs in on this, if you can, while you're giving your answers. Go ahead, Doyle.
Well, Vince is exactly right. There's never been a starker contrast, because now the Republican Party represents the views and values of everyday working Arkansans. It goes to show by our primary vote, first time in our history in 140 years, that 175,000 people voted in our primary and only about 150,000 in the Democrat. That is showing that the people of Arkansas are identifying with our move for lesser government, less restrictive government from the federal level, jobs, better education, lower taxes.
The turnout, I've heard arguments on the Democratic side that there were...
I weren't expecting it to be that high.
Right. I'm happy to talk about it, but, you know, the fact is Republicans had 27 primaries. We had 5 primaries. I mean, all of the...
No one wants to be a Democrat. Is that what it is?
No, I don't think that's at all. I think everybody was really happy about Patrick Henry Hayes and Mark Pryor and Mike Ross and Jackie McPherson, and of course Director Witt, James Lee Witt in the 4th District. They just didn't have people run against them, and I just think that's pretty wonderful. It just shows how united our people are. But the fact of the matter is, You know, if you were to really look at it, I was expecting there to be a 70-30% ratio difference, and there just wasn't. It looks to me like the Republicans really got some issues going on there.
Yeah, I want to get some questions in about the general election, because that's what we're headed towards now. Staff and structure of what you guys decide your roles are right now within the state, because you're going to have the RGA, the DGA, the NRSC, you're going to have DNC. Everyone is going to be in here putting in, not to mention the C4s. Where is the role of our party in Arkansas? Vince?
Well, let me jump in there and say that. Let me first go back to the primaries. Let me say, we had great primaries. Primaries are the laboratory of great ideas. We had elections in our primaries. Our candidates are ready and poised with their organizations. The Democrats had coronations. We had elections, and we're ready for November. What is our role? Our role in the general will be to give those elections the Arkansas flavor. Okay, we're the ones that those ideas run through, what resonates in Arkansas, how do we say y'all, all of those kind of things. We will temper those monies that are coming into
the
state.
Now tell me how that represents a working class family in Arkansas who's concerned about the minimum wage, who's concerned about the private option, who's concerned about Social Security and making sure they can pay their bills, who's concerned about protecting their Medicare. I don't know of a single, and by the way, I guess you coronated Tom Cotton because he didn't have any opposition either. But, you know, I think you have to really look at what do working class people in Arkansas, and clearly it's the Democrats, with pre-K education. If you talk to single moms I don't know a single mom who does not want their kid in pre-K.
So you just went on the offensive here. Does that make your role more of the attack dog? Is that how, you know, you...
Me personally?
No, the party in Arkansas, you know, allowing the candidates to introduce themselves, speak on what they want, but does that make the party in Arkansas become the attack dog of the opponent?
Well, I mean, I just because I go on the offensive doesn't mean I'm attacking.
I'm
contrasting differences is what my role is.
Sure, and
as
is that
to the party, but I think you're absolutely going to see a complete contrast between us trying to protect Medicare for seniors and their side trying to privatize Medicare for seniors, us trying to get pre-K for all children in Arkansas, them trying to stop pre-K. Absolutely, you're going to see those differences out there between the elect before
you know,
now.
Clearly, the issue on every Arkansan's mind is the overreach of federal government and how the federal government, through Obamacare, has come between a patient and the sacred relationship with their doctor. Arkansans are concerned about the federal government and what they are doing to the quality of life in Arkansas, to the lack of job creation, the lack of interference in our local education programs. The issues will be the same, but how do we address them? Do we address them from a state point of view, or do we address them from a federal point of view? We Republicans believe that Arkansans know best how to govern Arkansas.
So you have to let me answer that.
You got to quit telling people that the federal government's coming between. You know, you ought to be ashamed about that. It's absolutely not
Most
true.
Most Arkansans believe that with Obamacare.
150,000 people now have insurance under them a private option that didn't have it before. I wonder if you ask every one of those 150,000 people how they feel about it.
And how many people lost their doctor that the president said that they could keep their doctor?
I don't know of a single person in Arkansas who's lost their doctor, and I challenge you to... I would love for you to list them. In fact, I noticed those commercials. Well, we've already seen them, and those commercials have gone away. The ones that you pointed out, people who've lost their insurance, all of a sudden those commercials have completely gone away because they weren't factually accurate.
Just wait.
Is there any pledge that you guys would make that if there is money that comes into this state on television advertising attacking your opponent's ad or your opponent's race or candidacy, would you guys be willing to stand up and call it like you see it? I mean, in defense of an opponent on the other side of your particular party?
Well, clearly, we don't have authority over those groups that come in.
And I understand
and many
that,
times,
but I'm just saying, would you call them out?
We could not do that. I will be glad to have a joint press conference with Vince anytime that we can do it jointly and call both their hands on it, because it will come from both sides.
Would you be willing to do that, Vince?
Sure, but I will particularly make sure we do is that our ads are accurate. I will absolutely make sure I can count on that.
Yeah, but how can you make that promise for OA?
No, I mean, well, once you're going to have to, I can't for their side, of course, and they've already run a slew of ads that are inaccurate.
I think that's pie in the sky, because you cannot be involved in the ads of these independent.
No. What I said was is that I would, if once the ad runs, if it's inaccurate, we'll say something about it. We already did that. We actually called out during the primary with on the auditor's race when Ken Yang did something that was awful about Andrea Lee. It was the Democratic Party who blasted out an email really condemning Ken Yang for doing that. So, I mean, I'll continue that practice, sure.
And let me say, in that instance, we can't take a position in a primary, so we can't police our own primaries.
So in the U.S. Senate race and the governor's race, you got some good, strong candidates on both sides of the of political equation there. Do those races, as we've seen in the polls, they've been pretty much neck and neck. We've got some polls that show Democrats ahead, some that show Republicans ahead. Do those races stay neck and neck until now in November, or do you guys, as party chairman, do you see someone eventually putting a little distance and making it a little bit clearer? Do you think they go down to the wire?
I think they go down to the wire. Both races will go down to the wire.
Well, I mean, I'm looking at five races in the congressional races as well. But on those two specific, I think Mark's already starting to take a distance. He's already starting to beat Tom Cotton.
I guess it
depends on how much money they bring in to beat Mark Pryor up.
Let me assure you, so, we won't be using Harry Reid's money be using Harry Reid's money.
But he'll be using John Boehner's money, who shut the government down.
But your answer was that the races don't. They don't stay tight.
I think they'll be all over the map. I think you will see the races. I think you're going to start seeing, for example, Mike Ross, now that he's on television, I think you're going to see that race start where he's going to come back up again. I think, you know, it depends on how much advertising is spent. Well, nothing would make me happier than if we could say right today that we can put a limit on the spending, but we can't. You have to simply put out there your message, and the only way in this environment to get your message out there is on television and in mass mailings.
I do not feel the same way. I think that the groundswell in Arkansas today is at the barbershops and the beauty shops and the coffee shops, where Arkansans are talking about they want less government, they want a Republican form of government.
Well,
they
not
are
that
conservatives.
Well, then, so that $8 or $10 million you just spent against Mark Pryor, that's being spent
that.
At the.
That's you being know that spent. We didn't spend that, Vince.
Right.
Don't be spending things
right.
out of the trash.
That's
okay?
Right. I bet nobody will believe that the Koch brothers is trying to spend any money in Arkansas to help an elected Democrat.
How much did the Koch brothers give to Pryor, the $55,000, and will he be giving that back to the Koch brothers?
I don't know the answer to that question.
Find that out.
I'll be happy to let you know.
Vincent Sulaco, Janelle Lilly, will you guys come back next week and every week?
Because
this will be.
We'll help your ratings.
Nah, I appreciate you guys very much for being here.
That was Janelle Lilly, Vince Insolico, and Doyle Webb talking with Roby Brock from our content partner, Talk Business and Politics. Support for Talk Business and Politics on Ozarks at Large is provided by AT&T, challenging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com. And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com.
And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. Coal, oil, natural gas, hydropower, and renewables. More at AECC.com. And the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. More at ArkansasStateChamber.com.
I'm Robin Young. A growing number of people in Colorado are making marijuana hash oil despite warnings from police.
Don't do it in your house. It's going to blow up. All kinds of warnings, but people just don't listen, and they do just that. They end up blowing their house up. They end up blowing themselves up.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Listen this afternoon from 1 to 3 to KUAF 91.3 FM.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Karnatz.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Yesterday evening, you were up at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art.
Inside the Great Hall for this year's edition of Mozart in the Museum. The Artisphere Festival Orchestra playing inside. This is a world-renowned gathering of musicians, many of them young. Last year's average age, 26. Corrado Rivera is considered a very good conductor, so it's a world-class orchestra. Then you're in the Great Hall, which you've been in, I think.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You know, and it's, if you sit in there, 80% of the walls are glass.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's spring right now, so there are these deep greens. And then even if you're in the back row, you're only maybe 20 feet, 25, well, maybe 40 feet away.
They're right there.
Back row. So it's so intimate. And it hit me last night, this is very rare to have this level of musicianship this close in this kind of venue. And I think everyone was just kind of buzzing afterward because it was magnificent.
Well, you were there because you and Katie Henriksen, our classical music producer,
yes.
were there because we broadcast this performance live
yes,
on KUAF.
Yes, as it happened.
Y'all sounded great.
Well, thank
I mean,
you.
It
we
was
had a
just,
good time.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. But in addition to just, you know, kind of commentating on the performance, you also were able to interview some of the performers.
Right. Two-thirds of Time for Three. The trio that has actually received a lot of attention lately because two of them couldn't get on a plane flight with their violins.
Right.
They wanted the violins checked, so this video has gone viral. But they will be performing with the Artisphere Festival Orchestra Saturday night at Walton Arts Center, a concert of American composers' music. And so after last night, two of the three, Nick Kendall and Rand Meyer, two of the three of Time for Three, sat down, talked to Katie and talk to me about the performance and just how excited they were about their upcoming performance with the Artisphere Festival Orchestra.
Oh, man, that's going to be outstanding. I mean, they're so great. And a lot of them are actually friends of ours.
Yeah, that's the cool thing about being here and seeing them play. They're just enjoying. And also, actually, this piece that we just heard them play, the Jupiter Symphony, Renan and I used to have reading sessions at Curtis. Back. This is where we went to school.
I remember that.
You remember? And just conductor and just having jam sessions on this piece. And so it brings back memories of that energy.
Yeah. And that fourth movement of the Jupiter was just outstanding. Yeah. So much energy, fervor. It was incredible.
Let's talk a little bit about Saturday night's concert. It's Copland. It's Brubeck.
Yeah. Jennifer Hagen, Blue Cathedral as well.
We were in the orchestra.
When it premiered at Curtis.
We were the first performance of it. Nice. We were in the orchestra at Curtis.
She had all these Chinese balls. There's this part in the cathedral where everyone has to do this musical thing with the Chinese balls. And the piece became so popular that she actually had to rent, like, you know, so many different sets of these and couldn't get them out in time for, like, the next, you know, performance of the piece. But the piece that we're playing is Travels in Time for Three by Chris Brubeck, the son of Dave Brubeck, the late Dave Brubeck. And it's an outstanding piece. He comes from a jazz tradition, plays bass trombone and a little bass guitar, so he's a man after my own heart.
Absolutely.
And he basically takes us through a journey of all these different genres of music within sort of the idiom of jazz. We start in kind of just, you know, typical bebop. It runs its course into the kind of funk. It goes into gospel. It makes its way even to baroque and then finishes in a tango. Only the first movement.
That's exactly the first movement.
The second movement. I knew we'd get that reaction from you guys.
Yeah, the second movement is like an Irish Celtic.
I thought you were singing about the whole piece.
I know, nope. Just the first.
Oh.
Second movement's Celtic and a little funk.
Yep.
So that's it for that one. And then the third movement is just this slow, lush, beautiful colors called Suspended Bliss. And then the fourth movement, again, is a major journey, much like the first. All different styles.
Now, you guys have experience with this, but how do you meld so many different genres and types of music together to create something that holds together as one piece?
We've talked a lot about this. I think, growing up in America and experiencing as young people around many different types of experiences, and not only music, I mean, just American culture, there's such a fusion of different type of experiences. And I think the way we put our styles together is how food is fusing together. It's organically, you know, food, you have like French and Asian cuisine, and it's those two melded together. You may have the ingredients of the sources, but together they create something completely new and original. I think for us, it's how we build our compositions. I mean, really the biggest struggle in our career is people trying to pigeonhole us, but really we're just musicians. We're speaking the language of music. I know it's so generic to say and so cliche,
true.
But it really is, because we're fusing together in an organic way styles that we like. and music that we like. But really, what it boils down to, even after all that, is the moment that we get to be on stage or playing with each other and having that experience and sharing that energy with whoever we're collaborating with, each other, anywhere. So it's just fun. It's just a lot of fun. And it's sometimes just as simple as that. And we just happen to be fusing together many different cultural things in one, you know?
Absolutely.
What is it like to come to a festival like this where you're here for a matter of days, you're around peers, people who, because you guys do not like for enthusiasm anyway, but what is it, can you describe what it's like for you to be here immersed in this, not just the rehearsals, but the hanging out and and the energy?
Well, we're no stranger to this type of thing. We do residencies all over the world and you know, get out to a place. And one of the things that Time for Three likes to do is actually be in a city for more than one day.
Oh, my gosh.
It gets exhausting otherwise. And so it's really nice when we get to just spread out. We make friends pretty quickly. We get to know a lot of people. And fortunately, we also have the pleasure of being on, you know, involved with the media, you know, and getting interviewed so people get to know us. So it's a great in, you know. It's sometimes I feel like I know every other city better than I know the one that I'm from because of the way that we get just sort of, you know, infused, you know, into the society of the culture of wherever we're going. So it's really a wonderful experience, and this place is awesome. You know, it's so great to actually travel the world and tell people about Fayetteville and what it's all about. Some people may have heard of it, others maybe not, and to kind of educate them about it and to tell them that this is incredible festival, Artosphere, down here. And I mean, the orchestra is outstanding. Yeah. Conductor's terrific. Peter Lane is somebody, the president, who we've known forever. There he is, by the way.
There he is, looking at us.
and he was one of our first breaks as musicians. So it really is, it's so cliche to say, but it really is a small world, and it's just great to be able to share in that. That way.
Well, Saturday night you'll be on stage and you'll be around, you know, hither and yon. In
Flint. We spent a lot of time already in the last 2 days playing for local children in schools.
Man. The kids here, they're just so great. I mean, you really are doing something well with that. I mean, the music school, we went to the Bentonville Arts.
Yeah. Oh, Benton County School of the Arts.
Yeah. And we were there for the last couple of days, and that was tremendous. And I mean, these kids, they're just so good. We have this bully prevention video, mm-hmm. and we play it for them to start out the outreach, and then we talk about it with them.
That was
amazing. They're just so, they're so captive, you know, and they have so many beautiful things to share about, you know, their own experiences, people that they may have been bullied with and why it's not good and how they can overcome it and the empowerment, you know, and the message that goes along with it. The video is pretty interesting because it's about this young boy who gets bullied for playing the violin, and then he fights back with his instrument and with his music, and then kind of wins over the bully and gets the girl, you know.
Yep.
Thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you for having us. It's a real pleasure.
And welcome back to Northwest Arkansas.
Thank you very much.
Great to see you all.
Thank you. Time for Three will be with the Artosphere Festival Orchestra Saturday night. The American Crossroads Concert at Walton Arts Center begins at 8, and the tickets begin at $10.
The addition of the Razorback Regional Greenway to Northwest Arkansas has given residents more opportunities to be active outside. On any given day, people use the trail systems for walking, bicycling, and running. For the latest installment of our monthly sports series, Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has this report on how local residents can become involved in the sport of running.
The trail system in Fayetteville meanders by a number of local businesses, including Fossil Cove Brewing Company. On a warm spring evening, patrons often sit outside sipping local beers. A small group of runners gathers on a sidewalk nearby.
You going to do Meadow Valley?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
Why not?
Okay.
Then we can run up to Gordon Long Park and get water if anybody's about to die.
How far are we going?
These six athletes are members of the Mustache Running Club, which was started by Brian Bailey, owner of the Mustache Goods and Wares. He says the club got started when a group of friends jokingly started calling themselves a running club. Brian says it eventually became a thing, so he printed up t-shirts, and now there's a Facebook page with about 70 members, though Brian says 5 to 15 people regularly participate, depending on the day. Brian is currently training to run a 50K race in 2 weeks, but he hasn't always been a runner.
I was your good, fat, lazy Southern kid, and my wife loves running, fell in love with it in college, and so eventually I figured out if I wanted to hang out with my wife, I had to start running. And here we are. I think I've been running for almost 6.5, 7 years, and I love it. And even when she's hurt and not running, I'm running, and it's part of my lifestyle now.
Brian says he jokes about being unathletic, but he did participate in sports as a kid, like baseball, basketball, and soccer. Since taking up running, Brian has participated in a number of races, including marathons, and says he is still in awe about what he has accomplished.
For me, I still have that feeling of I can't believe I'm doing this every time I'm even 5 miles into a run, much less over 20 miles into a run and doing marathons. And it's a gradual thing. It's most people don't just start off running a long ways, and most people don't do it alone. You know, thankfully there's running stores and running groups, and because it's a hard one just to get out and say I'm going to be a runner without any support, because it can get really lonely.
That camaraderie is something Brian enjoys about running with a group. If he is having a rough time, his fellow runners can help pick him up. Brian says a group offers the chance to talk with friends about life during a long run. It also helps hold him accountable for his running habits. While running seems like it can be a very isolated sport, Brian says it can actually be pretty social.
I've said many times I'm done running marathons, and I just keep doing it. I think it's a product of friendships. And if we're going to keep running long distance together and hanging out every weekend, why not sign up for something? It gives you a goal. And if you feel good, you can try to do a personal best. Or if not, the fun part is you still get a shirt and a medal for finishing. So you can still feel awesome even if you run slow. That's the fun part. When you run races, you see every shape and size and color and men and women. And a lot of times you're like, I can't believe that person's beating me, or I can't believe I beat that person. But it's, you know, unless you're the fast person, like you said earlier, who does run alone and trains alone, it's a lot more social and you can have fun doing it.
It's not uncommon for runners of all shapes and sizes and varying levels of athletic ability to participate in races locally because of how accessible the sport has become in Northwest Arkansas.
For this area, it's so accessible. I mean, you really just need a pair of shoes because our trail system is unbelievable. You know, the running stores we have in town and the races we have in town. You know, in the next year, there's like at least four or five major half marathons within 20 miles of Fayetteville, or including Bentonville as well. There's marathons here, and all the major cities around us have them. It's accessible. You don't have to fly 1,000 miles to do it. And you don't have to race to do it. That's the fun part, is you're going to run past strollers and kids and dogs and bikes, and it's kind of a fun community thing. You start seeing the same faces. I see the same faces every morning or every weekend when we're running and training for races. We're like, oh, they must be doing the same race and going different directions, and makes it fun.
The nonprofit organization Running USA published its inaugural half marathon report in 2010 because of the growth of participation in those races. Because of the growth in another sector of the sport, Running USA published a non-traditional running event special report last month. The study found that in just 5 years, the number of estimated finishers in U.S. non-traditional events has grown from the low six figures in 2009 to about 4 million in 2013. These non-traditional races include 5Ks like the Color Run. For anyone interested in becoming involved in running, Ryan suggests just going for it. He says there are a number of resources online or even locally to help you reach your goal, whatever it may be. Both Fleet Feet and Rush Running Company offer training programs for local runners. In addition to being advantageous for your health, running can also help with self-confidence. Kristen Page is the program director for Girls on the Run of Northwest Arkansas, and she describes the program as a self-confidence and empowering program for girls that happens to have a running component. Girls on the Run was founded in 1996 in Charlotte, North Carolina, and it became the nonprofit organization known as Girls on the Run International in 2000. Girls on the Run of Northwest Arkansas started as an affiliate of the Boys and Girls Club of Benton County in the fall of 2004 with 8 girls and 3 coaches. Since then, more than 5,600 girls have participated in the program in Benton and Washington counties. Kristen, who was not a runner, became involved in the program in 2009. At the time, she was teaching in Rogers and decided to volunteer as a coach when the program was introduced at her elementary school.
And I thought, okay, sure, why not? I'll just, you know, help out, not really knowing anything about the program at all. But because it's not a running program per se, it's more like about character building and dealing with girl issues and social relationships and inner beauty and bullying and all that stuff that girls get into. That is what got me hooked once I got in it and got to see it and have stayed with it ever since. Now, the fact that it has the running component piece is just an added bonus because health and fitness is also important. But we have girls that can run it and run every step, and we have girls that are not runners and they walk, but the goal is just to keep moving.
Girls on the Run is designed for girls in 3rd through 5th grade, and the middle school component called Girls on Track is for girls 6th through 8th grade. Locally, the Girls on the Run program consists of a 10-week curriculum where participants meet twice a week after school for an hour and a half, and it culminates with a 5K running event. For the running component of the program, Kristen says coaches help the girls set personal goals.
We have girls that say they can't run. Okay, so we will suggest, okay, so when you're going around the track, why don't you walk the sides or run the sides and walk the curves? You know, let them set small goals for themselves, and then maybe challenge them the next time. Okay, well, if you ran the curves and walked the straights, flip that or run a lap, walk a lap. You know, we just suggest things like that, and typically, once we give them a few ideas like that, they will start setting their own short goals and say, and they'll come and say, well, yesterday I only could run a lap, but today I ran 2 laps without stopping. So it kind of just lets them know that they don't have to get out there and run a 5K the first day. And the activities that go with our workouts kind of let them run a little, walk a little, and they're kind of playing while they do it. So it kind of tricks them a little bit into running. You know, maybe not trick, but, you know, they don't realize how much running they're actually doing, and then they just build up that stamina.
An example of one of those activities is a scavenger hunt, where the girls are asked to look for things like a yellow flower while running. A practice 5K is built into the curriculum so participants can see how they might do in a race prior to the scheduled 5K at the end of the program. Girls on the Run of Northwest Arkansas became a nonprofit in 2009 and is supported through fundraising events and donations. Kristen estimates it costs about $100 to $150 per girl to participate in the program. However, about 98% of the students receive scholarship funding. Having been involved with the program for a few years now, Kristen says she has become more of a runner herself, but it's seeing the change in the girls that she enjoys so much.
I had so many students that were insecure with who they were and had trouble making friends, or they were, say, in the 4th grade reading on a 1st grade reading level. And the program is 10 weeks from start to finish. And so there's a lesson, whether it be inner beauty, bullying, nutrition, community service, all that kind of stuff is tied in. And then there's a workout at the end of, incorporated into every lesson. At the end of those 10 weeks, the results that I saw in the girls who were struggling that way, in their self-confidence, their ability to make friends, if they had trouble with, you know, not telling the truth or the tendency to steal, you know, those kinds of things, completely changes them in 10 weeks. And it's just a program that I believe in, that I hope that Northwest Arkansas will keep around and grow in the future so that we have all the girls in the 3rd through 5th grade age range can participate in.
More information about this program is available at gotrnwa.org. For details on where the Mustache Running Club will be meeting up next, search for the group on Facebook. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
National Running Day is June 4th. If you want to run in a race next week or in the next few months, you can find a list of races happening around the state this year at arkansasrunner.com.
Jennifer Farr Davis had a not-that-unusual dream for her life immediately following college. After she graduated from Samford University, she wanted to hike the entirety of the Appalachian Trail. Many people at least daydream about traversing the 2,181-mile course called simply the AT by devotees. And Jennifer Farr Davis did hike the trail through all 14 different states it covers from Georgia to Maine. She would go back to the trail the third time she hiked it in a record 46 days, averaging 47 miles per day. Her professional life is now devoted to hiking, and she is the founder of Blue Ridge Hiking Company. Her books include Becoming Odessa, Epic Adventures on the Appalachian Trail, and her latest book, Called Again, A Story of Love and Triumph. Earlier this month, she spoke at an event at Packrat Outdoor Center in Fayetteville. And while she was in town, she came by the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio.
I make my living through hiking and guiding and riding, and I love all things trail.
Do you have a memory of what you would consider your first hike?
You know, my family did a decent job of taking us out on short day hikes growing up, but we weren't an outdoor family. I played a lot of sports, and then when I graduated college, I had the idea that I wanted to hike the Appalachian Trail. And that was really my first step into the wilderness.
All right. A lot of people have that desire to hike that trail. Mm-hmm. A lot of people do some of it or never get around to it. You've done it more than once. What did you do to get ready to do that?
Nothing.
Oh,
I was 21, so I had a lot of excitement, but not a lot of experience, and that doesn't really bother you when you're 21 years old. So after graduating, I just got my brother's old Boy Scout gear and flipped through a few books and then hit the trail on my own.
I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but I would gather that you would not use that as advice for people.
No. Sometimes, people will pick up my first book, Becoming Odessa, which describes that initial journey down the trail, and they expect it to be a how-to book. And my advice is, don't do what I did on the trail. If you want to learn from my mistakes, that's fine. But I did a lot of things wrong along the way. I was just able to adapt and learn from my mistakes, and I think that's what ultimately made me successful on the trail.
You have since gone back to the trail.
I have now done the entire 2,185-mile Appalachian Trail three separate times.
And the last time?
The last time, this is really crazy. My husband helped me along the way, and we set the overall record for men and women. So for 46 straight days, I hiked, on average, 47 miles a day.
Now, is that enjoyable?
Yes. It's not fun. It is enjoyable. I do think there's a difference. You know, I really wanted to know what my physical limits were. That was the question I was trying to answer that summer. I had enjoyed a lot of backpacking, had very fun trips in the past, and I knew I wanted to be a mom and wanted to have a family. So if I wanted to answer that lingering question of what was 100%, what does my best look like on the trail, then I needed to go out and try to find my answer.
Were there any low points during that period?
Any low points? Oh, I probably had multiple every day. But the one that stands out the most is that, I got to Vermont, and that summer we started in Maine, and we were working our way down to Georgia. So my first day in Vermont, I had shin splints. I was having these weird after effects from some hypothermia I had experienced. And my body then just got sick. I mean, I was really sick. I was on the trail, and I had never felt so bad in my life. And so I quit. 100% in my mind, I was finished. And then I got to the next road crossing where I could officially go home. And my husband was there waiting for me, and he wouldn't let me in the car. I mean, he literally would not let me quit. And I was surprised and a little angry. But he told me I had to keep going another day and a half. He said, you feel too bad to make a good decision. Just go a little longer. If you want to quit tomorrow, that's fine. So I kept hiking, and a few hours later, medicine started to kick in, and I no longer wanted to quit. So I really owe the record to my husband.
There are a lot of spouses out there who just heard that and think, boy, that was a borderline great decision, irresponsible decision.
Yeah. That was risky on his part saying that, but it definitely worked out in the end. And usually he is so kind and sympathetic, so that's why it really took me for a surprise when he just wouldn't let me stop. But in that moment, he knew me better than I knew myself.
When you're setting the world record, the fastest time, What can you observe and what can you not observe?
I would never want to try for a record on my first journey down any trail, because I think you do take something in at a slower pace, and it is nice to be able to stop and picnic by a waterfall or take as many pictures as you want. But on the record, I still took it in. And I think, in a way, I needed the inspiration of nature and the beauty that surrounded me more than ever, because I was always on empty. I always needed something bigger than myself to motivate me to keep going. So when I needed that, a lot of times I would brush my fingertips along some trees that had, you know, been there for 100 years, or looked out at the majestic mountains. And the Appalachians are so wise and so ancient and so rugged. And I do think I drew maybe more of that strength when I set the record than I had on previous hikes along the trail.
How did you work out footwear? When would you know it was time to change?
Oh, man. I went through about 7 pairs of shoes that summer, and my feet were not pretty at the end. I did not wear flip-flops for a while. But, you know, I tried. I had enough experience at that point to know how to really try to take good care of my feet, and I had great socks, you know, fit socks. They're my favorite piece of equipment, probably. And Gold Bond powder is a miracle cure for wet feet. Sometimes duct tape is better than a Band-Aid when it comes to blisters. So, you know, all the experience and knowledge went to trying to keep my feet in, you know, decent condition on the trail.
Whether you're testing your limits physically or you're on a hike where you might have a picnic by waterfall with friends mm-hmm. or family, I get the feeling that you could take a certain trail, and I don't mean just you, any of us could take a certain trail several times, and it's not the same hike ever.
That's what I, you know, love about hiking, is that it's so universal. You know, you can do it for a challenge. You can do it with your family just going into a short waterfall hike. But no matter how many times you do it, it will never be the same experience. When I did the record, it was my 3rd time on the Appalachian Trail. I saw views that I didn't know existed, because before I had rain or fog. When I started, I saw these white lady slippers, which are these beautiful, kind of rare flowers that I had never seen along the trail, and all of a sudden they were everywhere in Maine. I saw a lot of different animals that summer because I was hiking so early and so late into the day. And so, yeah, people say, well, you've done it 3 times. Don't you want to do other trails? Yes, I would like to do other trails, but I would do the Appalachian Trail, you know, as many more times as possible, because it is always a new and different experience.
Other than harming the natural environment around a person, is there a wrong way to hike?
You know, that's a good way to put it. I say the rule of thumb is respect the environment, respect others, and respect your own body, respect your limits. And if you follow those rules, then you're probably, you know, whether you take a dog or don't take a dog, or hammock or tent, or hike slow or hike fast, I don't think there's necessarily a right way to hike.
I know I have talked to marathoners and ultramarathoners, and they'll get to a point where they're not even sure what they're thinking about at the time. Mm-hmm. Does that happen?
I felt pretty lucid on the hike. I remember, because I did have friends who were coming out to join me for, you know, a short stretch or maybe even a few days. And some of them were ultramarathoners and would ask these questions like, oh, have you been hallucinating? Have you been, you know, at these really, you know, moments of what I think is almost scary in a health scenario. And I was like, no, I think if I felt that way, I might stop. So I remember the summer very well. I think I hiked. I didn't run. So that limited some of the stress on my body and maybe my mind as well. But, yeah, I think you probably go through a different psychological journey on a 100-mile race than you do on a 2,200-mile hike.
Well, I'm curious. Do you ever see these folks who do the 100-mile run or climb Mount Everest or Diana Nyad? Do you ever think, wow, that's crazy? Or is it like, go brother, go sister?
Oh, yeah. No, it's funny because I don't consider myself hardcore. I do see people like hike up Mount Everest or do the, you know, ultra marathons. And some of it seems really extreme to me. And I think, and this sounds a little wimpy, but I think I have a speed threshold of about 5 miles per hour. You know, I can walk to 3 miles per hour. I can jog to 5 miles per hour. But downhill skiing, mountain biking, kayaking, whitewater, that is terrifying to me. So, yeah, I'm sort of a wimp in some weird ways.
I don't think anyone listening to this conversation would think you're a wimp. But but speed is a different dimension, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
I'm sure there's an answer to this. Is there a place yet you haven't hiked that you just really can't wait to see?
There's so many. It's hard to say. I think out of the country, I'd really like to go to Argentina and Chile. I haven't been there. And eventually, I'd like to trek some of the lower mountains of the Himalayas. But I think I've really appreciated, and I am a mother now. I have an 18-month-old daughter. And in a way, that's limiting, but it also, I think, exposes us to so much of what is really in our backyard in the United States. And my husband and I have made it a goal with our daughter to hike in all 50 states. And I've just been so impressed and amazed and in awe of what is in our own country. So we've loved going all around, doing local trails, seeing what other people experience when they go for, you know, a hike, because it's very different in different places. But that's sort of our new journey, and we're really embracing it.
And people can find out more about you on the web, right?
Sure. We have a website, which is Blue Ridge Hiking Co. That's co.com. And then there's several articles about the trail and about our journey that you can Google if you want.
Is it ever frustrating? I know before this conversation, you were in Tulsa, headed over here for the event at the Pack Rat in Fayetteville. Is it ever frustrating to be driving and think, oh, man, if we had 3 more hours, we'd pull over and see what that trail's like?
Yeah, I do refer to the car as the moving prison. So
I see that's frustration.
It is frustrating, but it's also our office. We spend so much time on the road, and my husband, he'll let me go, you know, hike on my own in the wilderness for 2 weeks, but he doesn't like it when I drive. He thinks I'm a much better hiker than a driver. So typically he drives, and I just you know, respond to email and work calls and get things done in the car. So, you know, it's not as fun as hiking, but it has to happen.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Jennifer Farr Davis holds the record for the fastest completion of hiking the Appalachian Trail. She completed the entire 2,181 miles in 46 days. Her books include Becoming Odessa, Epic Adventures on the Appalachian Trail, and her latest, Called Again, A Story of Love and Triumph. She was in Fayetteville this month for an appearance at Pack Rat Outdoor Center. You can learn more about her at her website, BlueRidgeHikingCO.com. This is Ozarks at Large. Fayetteville Public Library begins its FPL summer this Saturday, May 31st, from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. Science is big. Mad scientist Steve Cox of the Arkansas Museum of Discovery's mobile van will join the fun inside the library and at the City Hospital parking lot. Sign up for the family FPL summer reading program will be available as well. FAYLIB.org. For more information,
you could win tickets plus camping to the 11th annual Wakarusa Music Festival June 5th through the 8th on Mulberry Mountain in Ozark. Over 150 acts will perform, including Bass Nectar, Dr. Dog, and Boombox. The winner will be announced this Friday, that's tomorrow, during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. A few more hours to register at KUAF.com.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Boonville.
Boonville.
Yeah.
I've been there just once for a story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice place.
Yeah. Anyway, well, Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Karnatz.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Playing on my new name with all the continents.
You should.
Consonants. You'll be back tomorrow with Antoinette.
Yes, I will.
All right. Until then, thank you so much for listening.